celebrities, athletes, musicians, influencers, CEOs, entrepreneurs, business owners, experts, politicians, and philanthropists. Welcome to Interviews with Arizonans. Thought-provoking and revealing conversations with Arizona's most interesting and influential people. With your host, founder of Phoenix Homes and Hotspots and Alpha Whale Productions, Todd S. Hall. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to podcast.
Hey, 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 what's up, everybody? Welcome back. This is episode 2 of Interviews with Arizonans. I'm glad to have you back. Today, I have a really amazing guest, a person that I've been a huge fan of over the last several years. She is a senior writer at a major publication here in the Phoenix Valley. So I'm going to introduce you to her in just a second. But before we do that, let me introduce you to Phoenix Homes and Hotspots. That is my main marketing arm of my real estate company, Todd & Co., brokered by eXp Realty. And the best way to think of Phoenix Homes and Hotspots is it's really easy to go online now and find homes that you like. So if you're home shopping, you have a lot of resources out there to find homes. Of course, a lot of those resources, you have to be a little bit careful because if you put in your information, you're going to get flooded with real estate agent calls. So, but it's easy to find homes. You can actually use my website, phoenixhomesandhotspots.com, to search homes. So you don't have to go through that grind of all those agents calling. But here's the thing. Once you find a home that you like, that you're interested in, from there, what's difficult is to try to find out if you like the community that that home sits in and some of the hot spots around it. So what does the actual lifestyle look like in that area? So what we've done is we've created a YouTube channel called Phoenix Homes and Hotspots that is all videos. They're vlogs and neighborhood tours of different neighborhoods around the valley. We've done pros and cons videos, cost of living videos, and just a lot of information to absorb. So if you're looking for a home, make sure you check out Phoenix Homes and Hotspots. Go on, subscribe. It's youtube.com/ Phoenix Homes and Hotspots. Subscribe. And then when you hit the little alarm or the bell, then you'll automatically get notified every time we create new content on that channel. Speaking of YouTube, this interview will be on our YouTube channel as well. Right now, all you have to do is go into the search bar, type in Interviews with Arizonans. Once we have 100 subscribers, we're only on episode 2. Once we have 100 subscribers, that'll be youtube.com/ Interviews with Arizonans. And then last but not least, I want to give a big shout out to Security Title. They've given us this huge boardroom today to this beautiful boardroom to shoot the video side of this podcast. So with all of that, let me introduce you to my guest today, Angela Gonzalez, senior writer of the Phoenix Business Journal. Welcome.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Super excited to have you on. When I envisioned this project, like 3 years, it's been almost 3 years, 2.5, 3 years. I was like, I'm going to do this podcast. And I had this vision and it's playing out. I mean, my guests are exactly what I envisioned so long ago. It makes me wonder why I waited so long. But you were literally on the top of the list. As I'm making my list, I'm reading the Phoenix Business Journal, like, oh, Angela Gonzalez, she's right. She's doing real estate, right? Real estate, writing real estate articles, residential real estate. So anyway, welcome. Thank you for taking the time to come and talk a little bit more. I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to behind the scenes stuff. So you know that that commercial, that new commercial that they have out, the Progressive insurance, I think, where it's like teaching you not to be like your parents?
Oh, yes.
I'm the person that needs to know like all the behind the scenes. So I'd be the guy in the parking lot like, okay, how many parking spaces are there at $20 a pop every weekend? What does that come, you know? So one of the things that I really want to get into is what is kind of some of the behind the scenes look like, right? I mean, a lot of the people that are going to listen to this podcast are business owners or they're local entrepreneurs and that type of thing. And so I think the behind the scenes is really interesting. But for those that have never read the Phoenix Business Journal before, can you, how would you describe the actual content?
Okay, yes. So the Phoenix Business Journal is a weekly business publication. We started out just a weekly business publication. We'd come out in print every Friday and we provide intel to business owners, business executives, so that they can make good, informed decisions to help grow their business. Over the years, when the internet became available, we have grown more online. So now we are basically two publications in one, where we publish stories daily online. So we have our own, you know, website where those stories go, and then we continue with the weekly print publication every Friday.
So you have two sides to the content. You have, if I'm a subscriber, excuse me, I get the print version and then I get the digital version of the Phoenix Business Journal.
Yes.
Okay. So, all right. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. How long have you been with the Phoenix Business Journal?
Oh, wait for it. Okay. 34 years.
Wow.
I just celebrated my 34th anniversary last month in September.
Happy anniversary. 34 years.
I know. Is that insane?
Obviously, you love it.
I do. Okay. I really do.
How do you end up there? I mean, 34 years ago, you made this decision to go to the Phoenix Business Journal. You've been there ever since. But how do you actually – what's your story? What's your backstory? How do you end up there?
Yeah. So I was born and raised in Colorado, graduated from Colorado State University, technical journalism. And my mom had moved out here, so I followed her out. And – basically was just starting to job hunt, had no connections, no networking, just nothing, just coming out here cold. And the Business Journal had a research position open. It was basically editorial research assistant. I mean, it was just bottom of the barrel, beginning entry level position. You couldn't get more entry level than that. And it was a cool position because what I did, this was back in 87, right? I would drive all over the valley looking for records. So I would go to the business licenses offices in all of the different cities, pick those up, bring them, type in the information, bankruptcy court records, just so many different real estate transactions, anything that was in that's still in our record section today, I would go drive and pick it up and then type it in 12 pages. And I stayed doing that position until a beat opened up. And I was, the editor said, you can cover healthcare or you can cover marketing and media. So I decided to pick healthcare and have been writing about healthcare ever since, and then had added beats over the years, including residential real estate in 2018.
That's really interesting. So 34 years ago, and I kind of relate it to real estate, right? I've been in real estate for 22 years, and I think about how different real estate is from 1999 to 2021. It's so different. You know, I mean, in terms of how you searched for, how the consumer searched for homes, how we went out and found our business.
Oh, yeah, true.
And so for you, what is that like? I mean, for 34 years ago, now, what is the process of all that information gathering you were doing 34 years ago? I would imagine you can do a lot more in a lot less time and maybe even produce more based on, you know, how technology has changed.
Oh, for sure. Everything's now at your fingertips. And so you don't have to go drive anywhere to go pick up that data. You just type it in, and like the Maricopa County's assessor's office has everything. All those real estate transactions are right there online. I mean, it's just great. Makes it so much easier.
Absolutely. So going back to how you got started at the Phoenix Business Journal, do you have a journalism degree?
Yes. It's the technical journalism. It was the actual official name of the degree.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you're a senior writer. What does that mean as a senior writer? Obviously, 34 years, of course. You couldn't be a junior writer at 34 years, right? Probably somewhere else. But what does a day in the life look like? I mean, what is kind of some of the behind the scenes of what you would do as a senior writer?
Okay. Well, essentially, you start in the morning. We have our 10 o'clock mandatory editorial staff meeting. Basically, what we're doing is we are coming to the table to tell our editors, here's what we plan to write today. Here are the stories that I'm working on today, and here's what you can expect from me to turn in today so that we can get that published online as fast as possible. And so then we just start working on those. We get those interviews set up. We gather, you know, background data, get other people's voices, that third party perspective, try to get some numbers in the story, and you turn that in, the editors edit it, and then we publish it online right away. And so all of that is just breaking news as fast as we can type, as fast as we can get that news out there to you.
Yeah. So going from getting a story, well, so let me ask you this. How do you actually get a story? Do you go out and put your feelers out there and to try to like kind of prod like, hey, who has a story for me? Or now at this point, do most of your stories, do people just call you up and say, hey, Angela, I have a great story for you?
Mostly calling me and telling me they have a great story. It's almost like I can't even keep up with that. There is so much news going on out there. There's so many deals happening right now. It's hard to keep up. So I really don't have much time to get out there and try to find news on my own because it's just coming like a tsunami at me, whether they're texting me in the middle of the night or posting it on, you know, just messaging me on Facebook or emailing me or calling me, brokers that have deals that are coming or deals that just closed. I mean, so much going on. I just can't keep up with it.
So you were telling me earlier your favorite word. What is your favorite word when you're getting a story?
My favorite word is exclusive. So basically what that means is a broker who is who a deal came through or is about to come through, is in escrow and is about to close sometime next week, they will offer me the story first. And so I will work on it ahead of time, and then when the deal closes, then it publishes. And so what we want to do is we want to provide that information to our readers. We don't want to give them information that was already in another newspaper because they already saw. What value is that? And so to be the one to be able to write about that first and give you that information first, that I feel that makes me more valuable to our readers.
So for you, as part of, because those relationships are so important, is part of what you do actually going out and building those relationships with brokers, people in the healthcare, whatever, you know, all the things that you write about, is that part of what you do, is just cultivating relationships?
Yes. For me, relationships are the most important thing. There's nothing that tops building a good relationship of trust. And trust is really important too, because if they're offering me an exclusive and don't write about it until the deal closes, I'm going to honor that because, for one, they're never going to come back to me again if I write about it too soon.
Right.
But, you know, you have this give and take going on as you move forward on these projects.
Yeah. So an exclusive comes in. Give us a little bit more detail in the behind the scenes, right? So an exclusive comes in, the broker calls you, says, hey, I have this amazing, you know, story, and you love the story. So where does it go from there? How do you take the story from, and kind of a little bit more behind the scenes, right? In terms of the process, how do you take it from a phone call to publication?
Okay. So basically I like the idea. Yes, let's move forward. And so we'll set up an interview, and we'll get an interview with the person who, you know, maybe the broker that actually negotiated that transaction, start gathering the data, talk to other parties, like a third party perspective, to get, you know, that bigger picture version of what's going on in the industry. Get some numbers if they have data. I like to get a lot of data from R.L. Brown. They provide a lot of great, just that big picture stuff. They're amazing. As well as Zonda, they've become a really great source for me as well. Yeah, so it used to be Belfiore Real Estate Consulting. They used to provide that, and then they merged, and so now it's Zonda. So been working with them a lot as well.
So the story comes to you. How often does a great story just get left out? Where it's like this, you're thinking you have this amazing story here, and you take it to, you have a meeting, right? So so you take the meeting and they're like, you know what? This is just a huge story week, and this story doesn't make the cut.
Yeah, that does happen. I mean, if I think something is really cool and the editors don't feel like it's, you know, good enough, if it's not impacting our readers, it's not a very good business story where it's impacting our readers or making an impact on how they can make good decisions, it'll just die right there. When you go pitch that at the editor's meeting, they'll say, you know, let's just focus on this instead. And you might try to revive it. You might, you know, come back and say, you know what? What if I took it from this angle? Or what if we, and you, sometimes you do need to think through that process and,
wow, that's cool,
and look at another way to present the information, and you might be able to save it. So
So how do you save it? Do you chase them down in the hallway, or do you just
no.
Obviously you have to put some thought into how to like come back with this story,
yeah.
Right? Do you have to wait till the next so editors' meetings are every morning?
Every morning at 10 o'clock. No, you don't have to wait. A lot of times you can just as you're talking to the people who you're working on this story with, you might try to get some more information to make it more. You know, just more valuable to your readers. And so you're having that conversation with, you know, maybe the broker, and it's like, oh yeah, I should have thought of that. Good idea. So then you just reach back out to the editor and say, hey, what if I did it this way? And they're like, good idea. Maybe let's do it that way.
And so a story that misses the actual, because we talked earlier, there's two, you know, you have your paper and you have the actual digital version. So a story may miss the paper, but still makes the digital version, right? Because I mean, I would imagine digital version, you can pretty much put unlimited content on that.
Yes, definitely. So everything starts out digital first. So everything goes digital so that we get that breaking news out to you right now. So you can make those good decisions. So that happens. And then toward the end of the week, what we start doing is we start picking our best stories, the ones that are most impactful for our readers. And then we put that in our print edition. And each of the reporters, we each have our own reporter page where our industry news is on that page. So mine can be anything. It can be a compilation of whatever happened that week in terms of real estate, or it might be, you know, new dorms being built, or it might be a new senior housing. So mine can be pretty eclectic for what it might look like. Most of the time, it's all residential real estate, you know, I mean, because there's so much happening in that area. There's and not everything will make it on that page because you've been writing so much all week. Only a few of them get to make that cut.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because you talked about how you used to have to gather information 34 years ago till today. Well, 34 years ago, the other thing is there was only a paper version, right? You didn't have a digital version. So now, since you can do more, I would imagine it just expands how much content you can actually create because you've shortened the process along the way too.
Yeah.
So not only have you shortened the process, you've created a digital version that allows for literally unlimited, I mean, if you wanted to, unlimited content.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny you said that because when we first, so we were first a print publication for all those years, right? And we had our way of doing things. We would, you know, go to print on Wednesday and we'd come out on, well, the paper would be done, mailed out on Thursday and to your mailbox on Friday. And then we'd kind of start the whole process over again. So we were working on this one product all week long. Now it's like working for two publications where you're not only, you know, working on that alongside of your daily news. When we first started doing that, that was overwhelming. It was like, oh my gosh, I'm doing two publications at one time.
So your pay is doubled, right?
Wrong.
I hope everybody over at the Phoenix Business Journal is listening right now.
Well,
I don't want to get you in trouble.
No, it's fine. So it was hard at first because we were, you know, you're doing that. You have those deadlines for print and this machine that you had to keep feeding, this wild beast, and keep throwing stories in there for the online daily content. But now, after doing it, you know, after doing it for a while, you kind of get a groove down and you just go with it.
So I think of you as a local celebrity because I've been reading your articles for years. Is that true? I mean, you're telling me like, so you've been telling me you've been doing other podcasts. You are invited to real estate panels. So, I mean, you're kind of, I mean, people do look at you as a bit of an, maybe not a, okay, you're not admitting to celebrity, but I mean, people do kind of look at you as like kind of a local expert, right? I mean, you're getting all these breaking stories. You're on top of the real estate market like very few people are. So people do look at you as an expert in that industry. Am I right?
Well, that's scary. I mean, I guess so. But when you start saying expert, I'm like, I've only been doing this a few years. I don't consider myself an expert. But what I do consider myself is a good information gatherer. So all the experts out there, I'm just trying to give our readers what they're saying. That's the best I can do.
Yeah. Well, I think other people probably view it a little different only because, I mean, you wouldn't get in, you know, you wouldn't go onto podcasts and I mean, and this isn't a real estate, even though I'm a real estate agent, right? It's not a real estate podcast, but I mean, you've been on real estate podcasts and panels and stuff. So obviously people hold you in high regard. So that's cool.
Thank you.
So what are the topics We've talked about real estate. Did we mention? So what are, do you want to just mention all the topics that you actually write on right now?
Okay. So I started off with healthcare back in the '80s and have been writing about that ever since. And I love it. I mean, when you talk about healthcare, it's got to be the business of healthcare. So it's hospitals, how they're operating financially. Are they losing money? Are they making money? Are they expanding? Are they growing? Are they closing hospitals? Are they merging? Are they acquiring? So just basically the business of healthcare. And the same goes for doctors, like their practices, how they're able to, you know, grow and expand and, you know, do what they need to do, and contracting with insurance companies and all the business of that. And I know some people's eyes start, you know, rolling to the back of their head, and it might sound a little too detailed and too technical. So over the years, I've had to learn to write stories where you have to remember every day that you're writing for your reader, and not all of them care about healthcare. Not all of them care about bioscience. You have to try to make it so that they want to read that, and it's providing value for them. I mean, I guess you can't be jack of all trades for all, but you're trying to impact as many people as you can. So healthcare is one. And then I mentioned biotech back in, I don't know, was it 10, 15 years ago, when we really made a concerted effort to build our bioscience hub here. That was when TGen, the Translational Genomics Research Institute, decided to come here. Dr. Jeffrey Trent, he was at the NIH, this amazing scientist, and he went to Arcadia High School here. So he came back home and he decided to start TGen, this research organization that, you know, does genomics and molecular profiling, all this amazing stuff. And so that was the beginning of us trying to build a bioscience hub. And so starting to attract businesses in that area and vendors. And so over those years, we've been really building up that industry as well, and workforce and STEM jobs and, you know, just really high tech positions.
I have a confession to make. I do not read the biotech section.
That's okay.
You totally lose me, like bio, and I'm out.
Your eyes roll to the back of your head.
My eyes roll to the back of my head. I have really bad flashbacks of being in school, biology class and chemistry and all of those things. I'm like, I'm out. On the bio, I'm out.
I'm with you, because in high school, I wasn't that great at science either. So it was kind of scary for me to write about this stuff that is very technical and scientific. And so every time I would interview a researcher, I would have to, okay, dumb it down for me a little bit more, and dumb it down a little bit more. How would you explain this to your grandma? So, yeah.
But here in the Valley, I mean, we have, for people that are interested in that, we have some amazing people making amazing breakthroughs in technology. And I mean, it's pretty impressive what you know, some of the people behind the scenes here in the state of Arizona also, right?
We do have so many smart people. We have medical doctors who are PhDs, and they're researching and they're coming up with these amazing discoveries and saving lives. And all of that is happening here. And more of it continues to happen here as we build our bioscience hub. So it's really cool.
And then going back to healthcare, one of the things that you said that's really interesting is everything kind of, I mean, you're always trying to tie the story back to business, right? Because you're the business journal.
Yes.
So everything is always, we're always trying to tie it into the business community the best we can. And so I think that it's not just the business maybe of the hospital, but I would imagine that some of your stories are like, I mean, you know, in the last 2 years, there's not really much to write about in the healthcare industry, right? So I mean, some of it is like, I mean, business owners are impacted by some of the healthcare stuff, especially as it pertains to things like COVID,
yes,
right?
And definitely,
in terms of business shutdowns and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting when you say that, you know, you're always trying to find that angle of, you are the business journalist. You're always looking for a way to tie biotech, healthcare, and everything that you write about back into the business community.
Yes, definitely. Because we want to provide that intel, that intelligence for them so that they can make really good decisions. Yeah. So as far as if we're talking about COVID and we're looking at your business operations, what does that mean for me as a business owner, especially if it's a small mom and pop business? What am I supposed to do? What rules am I supposed to follow? I mean, it's hard enough for a small business owner just to do your business, you know?
Yeah.
But to have to worry about all these rules and OSHA and all these, you know, all these regulations and things like that, we try to help them make it easier for them to understand that so they can make good decisions.
Okay. So healthcare, bio, whatever. I'm lost after bio. So healthcare. And then what else? What else do you...
Education is another beat that we added over the years as well. And that looks more like workforce development. So when I'm talking to the colleges, universities, we're looking at how are they preparing the workforce for tomorrow? What are they doing to make sure that our employers have the qualified workforce that they need? Because one of the biggest complaints of employers these days is that they can't find enough qualified workers. And so what are we doing to educate those workers to give our employers what they need?
Okay. When I think of education, and it's kind of the same thing, right? I mean, the last couple of years has just been so crazy between, you know, healthcare and education. And then you could actually, you know, there's inroads in terms of how healthcare and education work together, where with school shutdowns,
yes,
from COVID. I mean,
definitely.
So you can intertwine all of these things really on so many different levels. But when I think of education, I always think from a real estate, a business owner standpoint, but also a real estate standpoint, right? Of, you know, better education. So we've had, you know, teacher strikes, Red for Ed, Invest in Ed.
Yeah.
We've had school shutdowns and all of these things. And I actually have real estate clients that move here because their kids can actually, there's a little bit more freedom, right? I mean, they're coming from California, Oregon, Washington, and they say, you know, hey, we're coming out here. I actually had a real estate, I shouldn't even say this, but it's crazy. I had a real estate client tell me like 6 or 7 months ago, he's like, you know, Todd, I'm coming to Arizona to give my kids a better life. I'm like, where are you coming from? California. It's wild. Like to hear that is just wild, right? And that's, so when I think of education, I think of things like that in terms of, hey, okay, we're now investing more in education. Hopefully we're getting more out of that because we also need our education system to improve. And so is that,
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And two, we have our charter system. So, you know, these charter schools that have been growing over the years and just, you know, they've had a lot of failures as, you know, they're basically small mom and pop operators. Many of them started out that way. Oh, we're going to provide a school and we're going to do it better than the public schools. And that was their whole goal. You can get public funding for it. So that was the goal. But a lot of them failed along the way, embezzling, just, you know, all those were fun stories to write. But there have been some amazing charter schools.
Absolutely.
That do, like, I wish I would have sent my kids there kind of charter schools, you know? The amazing things that they teach them. And so, they're making top, you know, their kids are getting the best grades and they're winning all these awards and they're just doing amazing things. So it's kind of cool to see our charter schools really stepping up to that.
Yeah. As a father of a 4 and 6 year old, I mean, I'm really on top of that. And we spend a lot of time in our YouTube videos, right? On Phoenix Homes and Hotspots, talking about the fact that we are a school choice state and that, hey, if you're not happy with the school that's assigned to the neighborhood you move into, you can move your kids through, you know, through a process and everything else. And then the fact that we do have some good charter schools, not all of them, you know, like you said, some have failed, but we do have some really good charter schools and we have a great public school system. So the fact that there's school choice and there are options does make Arizona kind of a cool, desirable spot for people moving here that have families and that type of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
And then real estate. And then so real estate, what are some examples of stories that are going to make the editor cut, right? When you go to that room, you're like, oh, this is a slam dunk. What are some good, you know, what's an example of a really good real estate story that you might write?
Okay. So some of the ones that get the most traction from our readers are those big master plan communities that are being developed. I just wrote about a couple of them recently where, you know, they have 2,000 acres and here's what they're planning to do. Here's the type of homes they're going to develop here. Here's the amenities. One of them, I got to tie in healthcare because they want to have a medical campus as part of their master plan community because it's so far, you know, so far out there that there's healthcare, nothing really near to what they help. The nearest hospital is like 11 miles away. So they would need some kind of healthcare component there for their residents.
Okay. So 34 years. Do you have a story that stands out as like your favorite story? Something that's just like off the wall or I don't know, like just something that just for whatever reason, it just stands out in your mind?
I did. This was way back in 94. So I was driving home and I saw this homeless family on the side of the road. And, you know, I just remember it was the whole family, the dad, the mom, a bunch of kids. And so I stopped and I said, I don't really have any cash with me, but I can go get some groceries for you if you want. So I went and got groceries for them. And then, so I started talking to them and the dad was saying how he gave blood for money. You know, I think it was like plasma or something like that. And so I went back, I was telling my editor about it the next day at work. And he's like, that'd be a good story. And it's not really something the Business Journal writes, right?
Sure, yeah.
And so I, you know, drove back the same way. The family was still there. So started talking to them some more. Anyway, wrote this story about this family struggling, and it's not really a Business Journal kind of story, but we wrote it anyway. Amazing editor, John Ginzali. He could just make any copy sing. He was just really amazing. And so we wrote this story, and you would not believe how many readers called in and wanted to help that family. It was like, I never even expected that to happen. People were giving pots and pans, and you know, they wanted to give thousands of dollars to just to help this family get
That's
on
really
their
cool.
feet. That was the coolest thing ever happened.
That is cool. So we've talked about all the industries, and obviously, look, some of the things that you write about, especially in recent years, right? When we talk about healthcare or when we talk about education, you start to get into some pretty polarizing conversations, right? And so the question is, how do you keep – one of the things that I know about you from reading your stories is that in a world now where everybody's opinions seem to matter in journalism as opposed to just facts, right? We're starting to publish feelings over facts or opinions over facts, right? Which, by the way, is fine as long as it's – you know, as long as you label it as such.
Yes.
Right? This is an opinion article, right? Not a – but what's happening now is we're starting to see people's opinions, right, that call themselves journalists, and we're seeing their opinions.
Drives me crazy. Drives me insane. You'll see on TV, I'm like, are you a journalist? What are you? Because you're acting like a journalist, but you're not talking like a journalist. What are you doing giving your opinion? That's not your job as a journalist. As a journalist, our job is to be – objective and fair, just objective and fair all the time. You have two sides of the story. And so you present both sides of the story and you don't interject your opinion ever.
So how do you keep in a world that doesn't, I mean, the majority of what you see out there, that's not what it is.
No.
Right? How do you, and I can't, you know, I read your articles more than anybody else's. So I'm assuming that the whole Business Journal, maybe it's just kind of the way you guys do business.
Right.
But how do you keep that journalistic integrity when you're writing your pieces?
You have to. I mean, you have to stay balanced and fair. Objective, balanced, fair. That's just who I am. I have to be that. You know, it's so funny. I have to tell you something. So when I was writing about medical marijuana way back when in 2010, when we passed the Medical Marijuana Act, allowing us to have medical marijuana in Arizona. And so I was writing about that, and I have my own opinion on marijuana. And so when I'm writing, and I would interview the dispensaries and the businesses that are operating this, I got accused of being completely opposite of how I feel. I mean, there's, you know what I mean? I was like, wow, in my effort to be objective and fair, I went overboard. They actually thought I was on the other side. That was weird.
Interesting. That's interesting. So in that situation, I mean, you were literally like trying to keep your opinion out of it so much that people thought your opinion was the complete opposite?
Yeah, I was trying to give the other side so much space that I probably maybe gave them more space than maybe it wasn't as objective and fair as I was thinking it was going to be.
That's crazy. Do you feel pressure? I mean, are there times where a reader, because I mean, people can reach out to you, right? I mean, your information is
definitely.
Like, people can reach out to you. So, do you ever get Do you ever get an angry reader that's upset that you didn't spin a story or you didn't put your... Let's start with where you were going and then let's go back to my question. So tell me about an angry reader.
Oh my gosh, people, they will reach out to you if you had a typo in a story and tell you how stupid you are. I mean, come on, guys, it's a typo. We can fix it. It's not that big of a deal. I mean, it is a big deal, but... not to call you stupid and just where did you get your training and just they just get so mean and angry. So people who have so much easy access to us and don't really take a breath and think about it before they just fire off this email. You're like, oh.
Well, can't you just blame the typos on the editor anyway?
Good idea.
I mean, you know, here's the editor's info.
That's funny.
So people get upset about that. So has anybody, because again, I think people kind of want to hear what they want to hear today, right? I mean,
That's true.
I hate to use the word because it's so overplayed right now, but that echo chamber, right? People kind of want to hear what they want to hear.
Yeah.
Do you ever get somebody that's just angry that you didn't spin a story a certain way or?
Yeah. Yeah, I get that too. But I mean, after all these years of getting hate mail, and I don't get a lot, but when it comes, it kind of stings and you just think about it for a long time that day. But you got to get a thick skin and you just have to just let it go.
Yeah. So what we learned here, one of the things I think for business owners that, and I say this half jokingly, but in all honesty, you guys are always looking for stories, right? So if you have an interesting story, I mean, I think when you were talking about like the exclusive, right? Mm-hmm. If you're out there and you have a story, you're a business owner and you have a great story, then contact the Phoenix Business Journal, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
because at the end of the day, you never know what you guys are looking for or what content might make it. But there are a lot of business owners that have great stories that could use that additional media. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. We'd love to hear from everybody.
So Phoenix Business Journal, we talked earlier, there's a print version, there's a digital version. Typically, if you subscribe, you get, I've always subscribed where I've gotten both the print and the digital. By the way, my wife no longer allows me to have the print copy because I'm a newspaper hoarder. And so I like to actually stack the papers up and refer back to them like encyclopedias from the 1980s. And it doesn't work very well. So every once in a while, I'll find a little tiny stack that I stash somewhere in the garbage can. I'll pull them back out and I'll hide them somewhere else.
Oh, that's funny.
So I have to, I now have to go through hoarding therapy before I can have the print version.
But the
cool thing, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So as long as you recycle them, that's okay.
Right. True.
But it's all available digitally too. Yeah. So you can just go online and you can see it exactly as it was and you don't have to worry about starting fires, right?
I don't have to start. I don't have to burn them. I can. So, and then the other cool thing about the digital version is you can actually just save your favorite article. So instead of trying to refer back to like, which one was that in?
That's nice.
So you can save them too. So that's cool. And then you get the book of lists.
Yes. At the end of the year, we have Dale Brown is our book of lists editor, and he's compiling all of that information all year long. And then we put it in a nice book for you.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Yeah. Let's wrap up with talking about, I always like to promote kind of some local things. So do you have a restaurant, like a locally owned restaurant that you and your husband or that your family likes to go to?
Actually, I don't. Sorry, let's just cut that one out.
No?
I don't.
No favorite local restaurant?
Not really. I mean, I'm always home cooking, you know?
No, okay. All right. Good enough. How about just like a local charity or anything that that you're passionate about that you want people to know about?
Yes. I just came onto the board of Helios Renaissance. It's a local group of professional singers who are performing around the valley. And so I'm trying to help them out. I actually am trying to help fundraise for them. So if you would like to give money to a nice nonprofit group that is performing Renaissance music, so that early music, polyphony and really good early music, that's a good group to help out.
And then what does the money go to if for that?
Yeah, what group? They're trying to do is, for one, they're trying to get a CD together. So their goal is to win a Grammy. So as part of that step, they need to have a CD that they can actually send, you know, to submit. And so they're in the process of making a CD, but that's going to cost like, I don't know, I think $10,000 or something like that. So they're still trying to raise money for that. But basically that's the biggest fundraiser right now, is to try to get that CD done.
Cool.
So I'm trying to help them.
Right on, right on. Angela Gonzalez, thank you so much for joining me. I think, like I said, you know, the majority of the people that listen to this are business owners. And yes. I think that there's a lot of people that that probably don't realize the Phoenix Business Journal has, you know, so much valuable content. So appreciate some of the behind the scenes look. And thank you for everybody for tuning in. See you next time.
Awesome. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this show, remember to subscribe if you haven't already and share this interview. You never know when you might change a life. If you'd like to get involved in the conversation, you can watch this full podcast episode in our Interviews with Arizonans YouTube channel and engage by liking, sharing, asking questions, and commenting on this or any other interview on YouTube. Thanks for listening to Interviews with Arizonans. Remember, keep asking questions until you get the real answers. We'll see you next time.